Member Week is here at Lowe's. That means it's time for MyLowe's Rewards members to save big with up to 40% off hundreds of items like appliances, tools, home essentials, and more. Plus, get free standard shipping. Shop these exclusive member-only savings now through October 15th. Not a rewards member? Join for free today. Free standard shipping not available in Alaska and Hawaii. Exclusions and more terms apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
And wake up, everybody. Welcome into Redacted on this Monday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And on this show, we cover the stories the mainstream media largely ignores. And today we're going to look at what is going on with this ceasefire agreement. President Trump slamming Benjamin Netanyahu basically during a phone call saying, take this deal. It's a win. And Netanyahu saying, not really interested in this. Of course, it was never really about getting back hostages from Gaza. It was all about the land grab. But we're going to talk about all of that today on the show.
Oh, we're going to talk about the Canadian ostrich farm because one of the ostriches has sadly passed. The Canadian government continues to persecute, torture,
harass
this ostrich farm. Also happening in Canada, they're harvesting organs from assisted suicide, so euthanized people. Hey, Clayton, would you like to kill yourself and then I can have your heart if I need it? That's happening. Why are organs being sold across the Canadian border? This is not at all about extending the lifespan of Canadians. This is a crazy story. If you don't think it's crazy, you're crazy. I'm calling names already. It's only Monday.
Well, someone in the chat says you look like a sweet old lady today in that outfit. So if they're calling you, if you're calling them names, they're calling you names.
What?
Sweet
Who
old lady.
That?
You are a sweet old lady. Hey, also, I don't know if you know.
This is a very fashionable top.
All of the hundreds of thousands of people that went to the Charlie Kirk Memorial, guess what? They were tracked. They were geotagged. According to new reporting by investigative journalists we're going to have on the show a little bit later today, it's actually shocking. If people went to that event, they might have noticed that like within like a day, they were receiving text messages soliciting for donations. It's all very strange. But wait till you hear about the company behind all of it. We're going to talk about all of that and more on this Monday. But first,
we want to tell you about our friends over at American Financing, because the Fed has finally dropped interest rates, and that's great news for homeowners. Expenses have been a major burden on family, with wages flat, prices continuing to climb, and for many, the only way to make ends meet is to lean on your credit cards. But that cycle of high interest debt makes it hard to get ahead, if ever. If you're a homeowner, though, you can call our friends at American Financing right now, and they can teach you how to leverage your assets in order to build wealth instead of continuously digging into the red. So this is something wealthy people do all the time, is they leverage their assets in order to build instead of digging and hoarding onto their assets. You don't do that. They can teach you that. They can help you pay off your expensive debt, free up your cash flow, and get your budget under control. And they save our average customer $800 a month. And if you get started today, you may be able to delay a mortgage payment or two, really giving you breathing room. So take control and call them, 866-890-8434, or head on over to AmericanFinancing.net/redacted. That's AmericanFinancing.net/redacted. The NMLS number is 182334. If you go to NMLSConsumerAccess.org, APR rates in the fives now start at the, APR for rates in the fives start at 6.327 for well-qualified buyers. So learn all this for yourself, AmericanFinancing.net/redacted.
All right. Well, President Trump has never liked Benjamin Netanyahu, but he puts up with him because, well, he's in charge of the United States. But over the weekend, things came to a head with Trump calling Netanyahu, expecting a positive response when they were on the phone, telling him that Hamas has agreed to the framework of the ceasefire deal and to release all hostages. Netanyahu told Trump on the phone, quote, "It doesn't mean anything," end quote. To which Trump told Netanyahu, quote, "I don't know why you're always so effing negative. Take the win. This is a win. Take it," end quote. Of course, once Bibi gets those hostages back, it's game over for him and his corrupt government, and he knows it. That's why today he's backtracking, as Chris Menahan writes. Netanyahu is trying to weasel out of a peace deal by insisting that Hamas release all their captives before Israel withdraws from Gaza. And here is his comments. Watch.
Well, we accepted the deal, as did all the world. It was President Trump's plan. Hamas says that it accepted the deal. Now the onus is on Hamas. This plan consists of two parts. The first part is releasing all the hostages. Israel makes a tactical withdrawal, stays in Gaza. And then the second part is meant to demilitarize Gaza and disarm Hamas. That will be negotiated. But the first part is there. It's agreed upon. And that could be the indeed the beginning of the end of the war.
Good. Well, yeah, okay. But it was never about getting hostages back. Benjamin Netanyahu doesn't care at all about those hostages. And Israel knows it. The families of those hostages have been protesting Benjamin Netanyahu and his government. They've been protesting in Tel Aviv for a long time now.
Now, you'll know that this is true because tomorrow is October 7th. Who will we see speak is released hostages. We will not hear from the families of the current hostages who have been fighting the Netanyahu government. So when that propaganda starts hitting you hard and heavy tomorrow, look out for who you get to hear from.
Exactly. And the media that you're being spoon-fed tomorrow on October 7th, they know this is about taking over that destroyed land, expanding Israel's borders. We got new drone footage in of what remains of Gaza, and it's absolutely devastating. There's nothing left, of course, in large swaths of this area. Absolutely devastating. These hostages are simply an excuse. The moment those hostages are released, game over. Colonel Daniel Davis hosts The Deep Dive with Daniel Davis. Great show, and he joins us now to examine all of the pieces of this framework of this ceasefire. First, great to see you, Colonel. What do you make of Prime Minister Netanyahu's comments there about the where we are right now with the ceasefire and the potential end of this war?
Well, listen, I don't think that he wants the war to end. I think that it's you said it very well a second ago, and I think I would even add to it that even domestically, politically, that there's too many people in Israel that are angry about the possibility, Ben-Gvir being one of them, Smotrich being another one, and large numbers of other Israelis. They don't want a deal that leaves the Palestinians in place. They don't want a deal that's going to result in the Palestinians staying and being rebuilt, because they want to take this opportunity to eradicate them one way or the other. So I doubt very seriously whether this is going to come to an end or not. And whatever President Trump says, and in that same interview that you showed there with Benjamin Netanyahu, he really emphasized that if this doesn't happen, if the Hamas doesn't accept it and meet all the terms that they've had, then he said, then we will do whatever we need to on the ground to win the thing. And he was citing Trump, who's put out a Truth Social, who said that basically Hamas had to accept the deal or there would be massive bloodshed. I don't know how much more massive you can get than what's happened for the past 2 years, but Netanyahu certainly seized on it. So whatever Trump may be saying behind the scenes, he's given every incentive for Benjamin Netanyahu to continue going on down the path he's at. So I want this to be over more than I can possibly tell you, just for the humanity of these people that are suffering beyond what anyone can imagine. But I just don't feel very confident that that's going to happen.
Now, I feel very much like the White House is portraying this as President Trump has strong-armed Netanyahu towards accepting this deal. Now, my question about the logic of that is that if President Trump had the ability to use this power over Netanyahu, he could have done it January of 2025. So now that there may be some way to present this as a public relations win, the White House can kind of say that President Trump used his influence. But I think that's a mirage. It doesn't seem like he has any. So what do you make of this propaganda that the White House has sway over Israel?
Well, listen, I mean, let's back up. You mentioned January when he first came into office. Remember, he started off, President Trump did, with a big political win because he got them to actually have a ceasefire when the Biden administration didn't even make an attempt all before that. And everything was in place. Don't forget this, to get all of the hostages back. all of them. So many of them were alive then that aren't now. And so that's something that's going to have to be reconciled. But there was a plan in place. All Israel had to do was just abide by the terms. They would have gotten Hamas out. They would have gotten a military victory in the war. And of course, most importantly, they would have gotten all their hostages back. That's not what Netanyahu wanted, because he didn't want then to have the Hamas or the Palestinian people stay in there any more than he does now. That's why I say that I don't think that there's any validity to this. I think, to your point, Natalie, I think that it is all political theater. And towards what end for President Trump, I don't know. I don't see how he benefits from what happened after after the January ceasefire fell apart, because he had every right and every flexibility and authority at that time, definitely leverage, where he could have said, hey, that's BS. You follow the terms of this thing, or I'm cutting off all of your supplies. He could have done that then, but he chose not to, and instead allowed Netanyahu to violate it and then just blame Hamas, like is always the case. And now then here we are in another case to where he's allegedly said there's going to be, you know, peace, eternal peace now throughout the Middle East. And, you know, part of me thinks he wants that Nobel Peace Prize so much that he would like to see it happen. But I don't know that that's going to be enough for him to go against Netanyahu if Netanyahu doesn't come through again.
Which said he won't. He said if we conceive in any way that Hamas is not honoring their part of the deal, we're going to keep going. He's given himself an out in the White House. He did that last week. Sorry, Clayton, go ahead. You.
Yeah. No, let's jump to that one as well, because, you know, you had this 21-point plan that was published that Witkoff had come up with and had agreed to, and that President Trump presumably had agreed to prior to that Netanyahu meeting. And then when Netanyahu came out, they had that joint press conference, and Netanyahu said, yes, I agree with President Trump. And then some of the main points that were in that 21-point plan were not in the Netanyahu part that came out there. And you didn't hear Trump push back on that. You didn't hear anybody in the administration push back on there. I mean, some of the key things were, the 21-point plan said that there would be a path to Palestinian statehood someday. There would at least be the theoretical possibility of that, that the Palestinian people would be providing for their security, that the Israeli side would fully withdraw. Netanyahu contradicted that and said, number one, at the UN General Assembly right before that, he pounded on the desk and said there would be no Palestinian state, because that would help them out and reward them for 10-7, et cetera. So he said, absolutely not, categorically. He said, we will provide security indefinitely, as far as we can see. There was no other plan on the table than that. And of course, nothing for the Palestinian statehood. Those were major components. And he contradicted the president right there on the press conference, and nobody ever did anything. So I'm sorry, but you have to ask the question, who's in charge here?
Yeah, well, I think we clearly know who's in charge in Washington, D.C., and that person flies from Tel Aviv on multiple visits to lay down the smack to tell them what we're going to do here. Let's talk about Hamas, though, Colonel, because I don't think that's a part of the story that's really been covered deeply. I mean, it seems like they're out of options here. This is probably going to be the best scenario they get, I would think, at this stage, because what else is left? Total bloodshed. Because to me, it seems like we're at a tipping point moment right now. Like, this is the end of the road right now. You either come to a table, come to an agreement. Yes, you're going to be conciliatory towards Benjamin Netanyahu and the Israeli side. Otherwise, it's just total destruction. And now you've gotten carte blanche to be carpet bombed and destroyed.
Well, here's the problem. Is that, and this was admitted by Emmanuel Macron, sitting right next to Trump a week or so ago. He said, listen, the number of so-called Hamas fighters is nearly the same today as it was on 10-7, 2023. And this is something I've been warning about from the very, very beginning, that the more people that you kill and the more civilians that you kill, the more enemy that you create. So I said it's just a churn. And I would even argue that I bet if you could somehow count, and who knows how even Macron came up with this, that there's probably more so-called Hamas fighters today, meaning anyone who's against the Palestinians today, than there were then, because you've murdered so many innocent women and children and old people and all that, is that they're naturally going to rise up and try to defeat the people who are killing them on a daily basis, irrespective of whether they're Hamas or not. So you can't really kill Hamas. And if you keep fighting, you will have to literally kill the whole population. So that's the first point on that, that there's not a military victory for you, for Israel to have, unless they just wipe everyone out. But there, to back to your Hamas point here, in my view, they have a single card to play, and it's not a bad one. It's a pretty strong one, but it's going to require eating all of their honor and credibility. But it is a big one to play. If they say, we will give all the hostages back, period, all the living, all the deceased, we will walk away from power, we will disarm, we will take advantage of your amnesty offer, which was in the 21-point plan, if that's still on the table anyway. They'll say, literally, we'll do everything that you ask with no exceptions, and we'll leave tomorrow. Then that puts Netanyahu in a really tough place, because now then, if Hamas does everything that they're asking for, and then they leave, now then, and they get all their hostages back, upon what basis can Netanyahu say, we're still going to fight? Now then, he's stuck with, we have to abide by our end of the deal here, or I think you may get to the point to where even the Western world finally says, okay, that's it. Now that it's been exposed that you just want to slaughter all the people. So I think that is the best card that Hamas can play right now, and would probably be, you know, some kind of a legacy from their perspective. But if they make a bad choice, and listen, we also got to be honest. When 10/7 happened, I'm going to do a show tomorrow that chronicles what happened from 1946 all the way up to 10/7, and it shows one of the reasons why it's not surprising what happened here. But Hamas's actions there have caused so much destruction to their people and a terrible thing to their population. That was the worst thing they could have done. This is the one thing that they can do that can help their people out and end the suffering. We'll see if they take it.
Right.
Wow, sobering. But you're right. And whether or not, because it really would box in Benjamin Netanyahu. You got everything you asked for, and then some. And now you're going to continue to bomb people. But they would love nothing more from this full land grab. There's a lot of money sitting in them there. Natural gas, all that, trillions of dollars in natural Palestinian gas sitting right off the coastline. I just don't think they're going to walk away from it that easily, even if they get these hostages back. Colonel, great to see you, as always. We'll be looking forward to your coverage tomorrow on October 7th. Thank you for this. We'll be watching, as always, Daniel Davis Deep Dive. You can check it out tomorrow as he chronicles everything from 1947 all the way up until October 7th. Thanks, Colonel. Great to see you.
My pleasure. Thanks, Jeff.
Wow.
All right. I'll be looking forward to that.
Well, you know, this whole like game, right, where we get played like, oh, Netanyahu and Trump are like mad at each other. We know, I mean, it's well reported that Trump does not like Benjamin Netanyahu. That's verified. Talk to people inside the White House. Absolutely, that is the case. But this sort of like, oh, they're fighting because they really want peace, and they're just like arguing over the framework of peace.
Yeah, I'm sure you could rewind the tape here on Redacted, and I fell for that a couple times when President Trump posted that Jeffrey Sachs interview while he was still a candidate for president. I can't fall for that anymore. So, again, I asked the question, if President Trump had the sway over Israel, which he does, but refuses to exercise for mysterious reasons, he would have done so, like the colonel just said, in January.
Let's read the pulse of the chat room over on Rumble right now. V. Gregory 3 says, I voted for Trump, but somebody is playing Trump like a puppet, a big, dumb puppet. Who do you think's playing Trump right now? Who do you think? Noel says, the USA is not in any kind of golden age.
Who said that? Did we say that?
No, Noel says the USA is not in any kind of golden age, because that's been Trump's argument, that we are in the golden age right now.
Oh, right. Yes. President Trump said that.
Yeah. All right. Well, let us know your thoughts on that. You can leave some comments here. Any super chats, we'll try to get to them throughout the show, as always. And if you subscribe, your name will pop up here on the big board during the live show. If you're not already subscribed to the show, it's free to subscribe to our show, which we're daily at 4 p.m. Eastern time. All right, we got more news to get to on your Monday. We're going to look at this ostrich farm up in Canada. You know that it's been under attack by the Royal Canadian Mounted Police and the Canadian Food Inspection Agency, which is basically a domestic terror organization terrorizing these poor farmers up there. And now, over the weekend, it came to a head. One of the ostriches has died, been killed. We're going to check in with the owner, because it seems like she has like 1 or 2 days left. Everything is coming to a head up in Canada, but we'll talk about that next. But first, let's talk about something fun, can we, for a second? Let's talk about masa chips. Our kids devour these on a regular basis. We absolutely love them. Once we, you know, because we like chips, you know, like watching some football or whatever, sitting down watching some baseball, want to have some chips and maybe some cheese and crackers and whatever. But I don't want seed oils. And that's where masa comes in. Because, you know, seed oils make up 20% of the average American daily calories. Masa has decided to do something about it. They made delicious, tasty tortilla chips with just three ingredients. No seed oils. They have organic corn, sea salt, 100% grass-fed beef tallow. Imagine that in 2025. Three ingredients? These chips don't only avoid all the bad stuff, they taste incredible. We put them out for my son's birthday party. All his teenage friends were over, and the teenagers devoured them. So that it passed the teenager test. One of our, you know, pick one of them. Which one do you like? The Caballero? You like the
lime?
The lime. Mm-hmm. Really delicious. They have a whole wide range of them. Try it with your favorite guacamole, and they don't break when you dip it in guacamole also. So give Masa a try today. Go to masachips.com/redacted news. Use that code redacted news to get 25% off your first order. You can scan the QR code right there on your screen. Give them a try. And, you know, I love having like, we have like four sponsors during our show. You know, like Fox has like 35 during an hour of their broadcast. And I love that we can get companies like this that, you know, are making healthy foods during a time when we're focused on making America healthy again. No seed oils. So give Masa a try and support Redacted. Go to masachips.com/redacted news. Get 25% off your first order. And if you don't feel like ordering online, that's fine. Masa is now available nationwide at Sprouts supermarkets as well. So stop by and pick up a bag if you're feeling crunchy, you're feeling hungry for them. I watched my Eagles get their asses handed to them yesterday and had some chips yesterday.
With buffalo dip.
With buffalo dip.
From Sam's Club. It was a good companion. It eased the blow.
Had to ease my man tears.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
All right. Well, the RCMP, the Canadian Food Inspection Agency, which is a criminal organization of Canada, have, as you know, ordered the killing of these 400 ostriches at the Universal Ostrich Farm near Edgewood, British Columbia. And over the weekend, things came to a head with, from reports, at least one ostrich dying. I would say killed because of what they have been doing and terrorizing this farm, not allowing these animals to get the proper care that they need. But we're going to get the straight info right now from Katie Pasitny. Of course, she is from the Universal Ostrich Farm. She has been fighting and fighting and fighting, trying to get the message out and trying to tear down like the tyranny of this Canadian government right now. Katie, great to have you back on the show. What happened this weekend and where do things stand now?
Thank you very much for having me. Am I frozen again?
Yeah, it looks like you are.
A little pixelated, but we hear you fine.
Every time
I go on our show. I don't know if you're on cell signal or are you on Wi-Fi? Or if you can flip to your cell signal, that'll be better. It might be that you're on Wi-Fi or something.
Right. Yeah, because it was just working just wonderful. And here we go.
Well,
I think we lost her all together. Yeah.
What do we think, boys? Can you guys hear her?
David, what do you think?
On it in the back end.
There we go. Is that better?
All right, let's take a look. I can't see, but okay. All right, well, let's reset. Right. So, Katie, what happened this weekend?
Well, this weekend, I'm sorry. So just on this note, we have new big cellular towers that they're erecting at the end of our road that they say are to intercept cell phone calls and cell phone signals. So we're having more overreach. you know, we're spending, there's about 30 police officers and cars here a day. We have the tactical force unit. We have drone units. We have a canine unit, I heard, here. And over the weekend, you know, we had the death of a hen. It has been absolutely heartbreaking. So she's about 20 years old. Her name is Spirit. And we had got her healthy because her knee, she had an injury. And she was having a hard time walking. We spent about a month with her just getting her back into good shape. And she was doing fantastic. Then we had the RCMP drones fly over on the Monday, really low, spook all of our animals. They were hitting fences. And this one in particular hen, she flipped a fence twice. And we have the footage of myself and my mom yelling at the drones to get out of here, to stop. She flipped over the fence twice. She injured her knees. And then we put her on an antibiotic and an anti-inflammatory right away while we were still in the pens. Then we were arrested. And everybody knew about that whole story, baited into the back, told we could feed our animals, continue to humanely care for them, keeping them calm and their routine normal while all this was going on. Then we were arrested. We were hauled out of there, and nobody has been allowed back in those pens that are our care, like us as a farm, as caregivers. So we had continued communication, trying to communicate with Canadian Food Inspection Agency, asking them, please, you know, have you guys been administering her antibiotic and anti-inflammatory? This is what we were using. She needs this. She needs you to continue this treatment. These are the medications. Here are the medications. They did not continue her administration of these treatments. So the only way Canadian Food Inspection Agency will communicate with us right now is by email. So it's extremely cowardly. They will not come to the fence. They will not allow us to treat our own animals, even though we've shown no aggression. We even said, if we don't have our phone, we will not bring our phones in. Just allow us to care for our sick or injured. They're not sick, injured. The mainstream media is loving to use the word compromised health right now rather than injured. And that is something we need to correct as well. We had an injured pen. And one hen had a broken toe. One rooster was half blind. This girl, we brought in there the minute she had flipped the fence twice. And so what had happened was they were lying to us about this hen. We were giving them electrolytes twice a day, 10:30 in the morning and 2:30, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. We were giving those bags to the PLTs, which are police liaisons. They walked over to the Canadian Food Inspection Agency. They gave them the bag. That bag was supposed to be go in and tube this hen and give her electrolytes and hydrate her and give her some strength. We have footage from people who were supporting us here that those electrolytes went in the pen, not even in an area where that hen was. They walked for about, I think it ended up being about 3 minutes. Within the whole total process of them taking that bag was 5 minutes, I think in 30 seconds. They walked, and there's visual footage of them taking those electrolytes and dumping them on the ground. They were not tubing this hen. They were not giving her nourishment and to hydrate her. So Spirit died out of sepsis, is what they're saying, because she had infection. So they did not continue the antibiotic. She died from dehydration. They were not hydrating her with her electrolytes. They were lying to us. And we are calling on for animal cruelty and neglect. These animals are not their animals. They are our animals. This is our land. These are our animals. While in their care, they need to be performing the same amount of care. If not, they should be performing better care than we would. They have the means to have 30 police officers and spend $500,000 a day at our farm. They should have the means to have the best vet out there and be treating her to maintain her health and well-being. So this is, we're dealing with such a big problem right now with the wolf is in the sheep's pen. And they have made it very clear. There is no pictures. We've been begging for pictures and imagery of our animals and their welfare. We've been begging for just some transparency on the well-being of our animals and why are they being pushed into the kill box before we even have a decision from Supreme Court of Canada. And They absolutely are just denying us everything that we're requesting. We're talking about living animals with heartbeats, warm skin, and the pitter-patter of their feet on the ground, that when they kill these animals, if they kill these animals, we're never going to get these animals back. Their hearts, you know, their heartbeats are gone forever. And that hen spirit, it was a big eye-opener, I think, to not just Canadians, but people across the world, what this organization's allowed to get away with.
But where are you on your legal challenge? Because you were appealing to the Supreme Court, which had issued a stay for the execution. Will the court give you back full access? And I thought you were under protection of an Indian reservation as well. So why are they still continuing to usurp your power?
That's right. This is an organization, we've now labeled them the Canadian Animal Cruelty Organization, agency, because they operate with no oversight, excessive freedom, and no accountability. There is nobody that oversees them. They get to make their own rules. They get to hide in the back. They're hiding behind the police officers with their badges and this police tape. And the Indigenous have stepped forward, and we've been talking about the unceded territories of the Siliks, and Band. And there's been some more that have come forward, but they're just really not recognizing that. We've been working with that steady to try and get some chiefs and elders out here. We did have some breakthrough yesterday. We have an elder named Bev, and she's performed multiple ceremonies here while this has all been going on for the 10 months, and healing circles. The birds love the native drumming. They love the ceremony. And they allowed Bev to go across the yellow police line yesterday and perform a ceremony of protection of the land and of the animals. And that was a really beautiful thing. They did participate in it. There was two RCMP officers that participated. And there's been a lot of healing here in some of that aspect. And I do want to look at the Royal Canadian Mounted Police and say they do have the right, just they could walk away. At the same time, I look at these RCMP officers and know that they are also victims of the Canadian Food Inspection Agency, because I told them if there was a real virulent threat here, you all would be at risk. They have not trained you properly. They haven't put you in the proper positions and the proper PPE or demonstrated any kind of leadership to show you guys, briefing you on the hazard, if there was a hazard here. And Canadian Food Inspection Agency is just hiding. They're hiding in the back of our field, and they're hiding behind this big hay box, which we're calling a kill box right now. And they're hiding behind it, and they're not answering to anything. They just want to keep putting statements out that these animals are, still a virulent threat, still denying us testing, which is extremely concerning. We have a vet coming today. That is a big update. That vet is here now, and they're allowing him to go in at 2:00. We are being persistent that we want to be able to take blood from these animals and just let the world breathe. Let's just find out that age-old question for once. Do these animals and are these animals carrying live virus? Which they're not. We do know what this is, the Canadian Food Inspection Agency. They're hiding. They have fear of accountability, and they have fear of what that's going to look like when these animals test negative. So we have so many angles, but all we've been asking for is the collaboration to be able, the opportunity to work with Canadian Food Inspection Agency. But I've taken a really different approach after talking to multiple farmers. This is an organization that has to be brought to its knees. This is, we're done. Like, this is in Canada, this organization has way too much power. And what comes with power is what we're looking at here. It's tyrannical behavior, overreach, oversight, no accountability. And our animals are suffering. This is neglect. This is neglect at its highest level of
Canadian farmers. This is like the trucker convoy 2.0 in Canada.
Yes.
The government overreach, the tyranny of these authoritarian governments who think that they can just terrorize these farmers and kill these animals. Yeah. You have, people yelling about it on the United States side, on the Trump administration, RFK Jr., and a number of individuals. Where do things go next for you, Katie? We have about 30 seconds left. Where do you think things go next for you?
next, you guys. This is ground zero for change. This has to be a collapse of this organization and rebuilt from the ground up to restore the faith and trust in Canadians that there's an organization that's going to protect them, not attack them. If this organization is doing this here, what have they been able to get away with for decades? And how were those animals treated and how much did those animals suffer under their care? And that's what we need to look at, is a better way. And these animals need to not suffer. We are waiting for the Supreme Court of Canada's decision whether we're able to have our case heard. We do have a couple other angles as well that we're going to go for, but I think it's time that they come forward and stop being cowards and they step into the light. They have a real, they're going to have to own up to what they've done. And we were arrested. And we were arrested for caring for our animals and wanting to stay in there with them and care for them. They should be arrested for animal cruelty, and they should be arrested for neglect. And I
can I ask you a question? These drones, they're flying over and harassing your animals and, you know, doing all this. Can you shoot them out of the sky?
Clayton.
Nope. Yeah. Hey, Clay, it's a good question. No, you can't. It's a federal offense, so you can't. Mm. We've had less drones lately, but we have a no-fly zone that they put in over the whole area as well. So that's with Nav Canada. They've redirected flights, flight paths, everything from over our farm. Nothing can come over. It is a war. This is literally a military operation on a farm that is just trying to do the right thing, creating antibodies, you know, for humanity and for other animal welfare. One thing that's been very made clear here is that the Canadian Poultry Association is the one that they're protecting, and it's not all of our small farms. It's not all of our other industry, and it's to do with politics. It's you go where the money is. If we have better antibodies than the chickens, then we're going to be dipping into those pockets. If we have antibodies that could create therapeutics, then we're dipping into big pharma. Big pharma doesn't want what we have here. These are prehistoric animals that have survived millions of years. And these animals have names. We just have to keep this in mind. They are not poultry. They are not chickens. They survived 70 years. And they have, our oldest is 35. And we need control back of our animals, and we need them to step off our property. We need the police to do the right thing and walk away. But this is setting a very scary standard for the world. And if this is allowed to happen at our farm, then this should be a huge alarm bell for everywhere across the world.
Katie Pasitny, well, you have our thoughts and prayers, and we're in your corner, and we'll do whatever we can here at Redacted to call attention.
I appreciate you both so much and everything you do and everything you stand for. And thank you, because there is life getting lost, and they are neglecting our animals, and they are inhumanely treating ours and probably millions of more. We know how the foaming and the CO2 gas and the suffering that a lot of these animals go through. And there's layers to this. If I could just quickly, I mean, as Canadian Food Inspection Agency also has their hands in the pockets, there's ties to the companies for the CO2 gas. And Hendrick's Genetic Turkeys in the Netherlands, they have their hands in all of these pockets. There's rabbit holes where they get kickbacks from, they've invested interest in the CO2 gas company that they use to kill the animals. This is layers and layers of corruption. We're just trying to really outline that right now, but I think it's going to be very important that this all gets exposed across the world.
My God.
Awful. Well, Katie, thank you so much.
Thank you
for taking time out.
Thank you.
I know, literally dealing with the police, like at a moment's notice, we were texting earlier, like, oh, I'm sorry. I had to deal with the police. So I know it's been a nightmare for you, but we'll keep fighting for you as well. Thank you, Katie.
Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, coming up, we're going to talk more about Canada, because they are harvesting organs from their euthanized maid patients. And this story, we knew it would happen. We've been talking about this for 3 years, but to see it happening is outrageous. You know what they want to do next is extend this program to young people and write the laws so that they don't have to notify the parents. Can you imagine? Your child says, I have mental health issues. I need to be euthanized. They go and apply. The Canadian government says, yes, you can do nothing about it. And they're carved up and their parts sold to America. This is the dystopic reality that I'm about to show you. and your jaw will hit the desk. So we're going to talk about that in a second. But first...
But first, millions of seniors are on the wrong Medicare plan right now. Most don't even know it. In fact, Trump's DOJ recently sued three major Medicare brokers for allegedly claiming to be unbiased while secretly steering seniors towards plans with the biggest kickbacks. Yeah, good on the DOJ for going after those people. That's why we've partnered with our friends at Chapter, because Chapter doesn't work for the government or big insurance. They work for you. They're the only advisors that compare every Medicare plan nationwide to find what's best for you. They'll even help you if you're hit with wrongful medical bills. That's real advocacy. They've saved the average senior $1,100 per year. In fact, one of our good friends used Chapter and is saving thousands of dollars going forward. The best part is this is free. Yes, it is free. You heard me right. It's free. There's no charge for you guys at all for our audience. You can review your options in under 20 minutes. Just call them 202-655-5811 to speak with our trusted Medicare partner that we trust here at Redacted. You'll be glad you did. Many people in our audience have told us that they wish they would have called sooner. And again, it is free. Go to askchapter.org/redacted or call them at 202-655-5811.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
All right. Well, Canada has crossed an ethical Rubicon by harvesting organs from assisted suicide. This is Canada's MAID program. We've been talking about it for years. Recently, the first heart transplant was transplanted from a euthanized person into a 59-year-old American man with heart failure. Now, this is not the first organ that was harvested from the MAID program, but it is the first heart. Now, we're going to get to all of the many ethical issues in a second. But first, one of them is national. How did an American man, get access to this heart? Well, according to reports, the organs are supposed to be allocated to a wait list and supposed to go first to patients in Ontario and then wider Canada before it can be offered to the U.S. So are you telling me that no other Canadian needed a heart? That this person volunteered to donate their heart and it went across American borders because there's no one in Canada who needed this? Well, that sounds statistically improbable, doesn't it? Canada has hundreds of patients on the cardiac transplant list at any time, according to the Canadian Institute for Health Information. As of late last year, about 190 Canadians were waiting for a heart transplant. So if I were Canadian, I would be very curious how an American skipped the line, wouldn't you? Hearts are extremely scarce. Recipients wait years for a transplant. So for this heart to have not been needed by a single Canadian, that's strange. That sounds strange to me. It doesn't sound right. Now, think about the timing of this. This is also very concerning. The patient is told, hey, someone's willing to die for you and give you their heart. So you got to get your butt into surgery at the same time this person's dying. And you accept that ethical quandary. Yep. Okay, I'm going to take it. Now, look how they report this timing. They say that within 7 minutes of death, the team said, yep, that person's dead. We're all good. They carve him up. They have the heart transplanted across the border. 6 hours later in Pennsylvania, that heart's put into a new person. Now, I don't know about medical practices in Canada, but this short period of time, 7 minutes, gives me pause, especially after in America, HHS Director RFK Jr. released this report in July showing that U.S. hospitals have been harvesting organs from patients who were, in the words of Monty Python, not dead yet. This is that report. It showed that in the hundreds of cases that HHS reviewed of organ donations, nearly one third of the patients were not fully dead yet when they started taking the organs. They showed, quote, neurological signs incompatible with organ donation. In other words, still alive. Now, we don't know if this is done in Canada, but it sure would give me pause if I had been signed up to be carved up for MAID. Harvesting of MAID organs is called ODE. It stands for organ donation after euthanasia. And not surprisingly, Canada is the leader of ODE. A Dutch study indicated that of 286 instances leading up to made in 2021, 136 of them were Canadian. This was before made even got off the ground, before it was popular in 2021. And it is popular now. According to this official report from 2023, about 4.7% of Canadians who died in that given year died from MAID. That's, you guys, one in 21 deaths in Canada is from MAID.
That's insane.
One in 21.
These
are official government statistics. Now, when I heard that, I was like, oh, someone's extrapolating. No, no, that's government data, which means it's probably conservative.
Right. It's probably worse than that.
Yeah.
Oh, you're feeling depressed? Why don't you consider MAID so you can, you know, kill yourself?
Well, MAID is not supposed to be offered to people with mental health as their only condition. We're going to talk about that a little bit more, because even people who support MAID have objected to organ harvesting from euthanized people because it creates this risk of death coercion, which indeed there is evidence of that. People who don't even have terminal illness have been informed about MAID from their doctors. And imagine a system, we have it, where vulnerable people are talked into dying so that their healthy organs can be passed on to the wealthy. That is the dystopic reality we're living in. And it raises disturbing questions. You know, Canada sells us like we like MAID because we're all about compassion here. We don't want people to suffer. Let's give them a compassionate way out. But you have to wonder, was it ever really about compassion, or was it destined to serve this institutional convenience, namely a pipeline for organs, budgets, bureaucratic efficiency designed and sold as mercy? I've been thinking about this a lot lately. You know, doctors don't learn to do things unless they can do it at scale, meaning it's profitable. So there is clearly a profit motive behind MAID. And before we end this segment, I'd like to give you this update on the Canadian government's efforts to extend MAID not only to people with a mental illness as their only condition for MAID, and minors. Now, currently, MAID is supposed to exclude people under 18 and people who only want to die due to mental illness. And we've shown you the documents before, how they also include in like mental distress, poverty. Like, you're upset about your own poorness, you could die. You could, you know, maybe raise yourself up by your bootstraps, or you could die. But the government has proposed changing this so that people under 18 and the mentally ill can apply for MAID and just die if they want to. Now, this document we showed you in February of 2024, it put those changes on hold until 2027. Now, they did this because they don't have medical guidelines to support it. So they had this special joint committee on MAID sessions, and not a single practicing psychiatrist or physician came forward to testify in favor of killing people with mental illness or minors. Not one. So the government said, well, then they didn't say, okay, then we won't do it. They said, let's put this off for 3 years and try later.
And by the way, they'll sneak it in. They're going to sneak it in next time. It won't get as much headlines, and they'll slide it right in.
Yeah, we'll take a look at how they said. They said, we need more time to come up with supports, guidelines, and standards. They don't have them. They want to create them. They're literally giving themselves until 2027 to make euthanasia for minors and the mentally ill look medically acceptable. So they're going to have to find some Frankenstein doctor who will sign off on this for the whole country. Now, another underreported bit of this is that they also want to write the laws so that if they do extend this to minors, they would exclude the parents from this decision, meaning they wouldn't even notify the parents that their child has signed up for euthanasia. Can you imagine? Your child applies to die, is granted this by the government, and it's totally out of your hands. That's a nightmare. So the Canadian government continues to insist again that MAID is about compassion. It's clearly not about compassion for the parents or family members or even the donor, given that you only get 7 minutes before your organs now no longer belong to you. And everything, you know, looks like this is just perfecting death on a schedule. And now even training doctors to supply the organs and expanding the clientele to the young and the mentally ill. At what point, you guys, do we stop calling this assistance and call it what it is?
People want me to give my Canadian salute like I gave last week, which is the big middle finger to Canada.
Right.
I won't do that, but I will point out also the fentanyl deaths, Vancouver specifically, and this was linked to this as well, MAID managed to now partner with a lot of these fentanyl deaths in these young people because younger organs are far more attractive, right? So not stopping the flow of fentanyl into your country that's coming right through your ports right there in Vancouver, these young people die. The MAID system has, of course, collaborated with a lot of those fentanyl deaths to be able to get those organs and harvest those organs from young people in Canada as well.
Wait, that doesn't make any sense. What are you saying? Like they're taking fentanyl addicts and saying, oh, you're too far gone. You might as well get MAID. Oh, okay. That has nothing to do with MAID. Then they can organ harvest from drug deaths.
Right. They can organ harvest from drug deaths. So anybody who's in those hospitals, they can watch them. They can swoop in. And then, of course, anybody who is post right after death, they swoop in with the organ harvesting.
And in certain areas of Canada, they assume organ harvesting consent instead of making you opt into it.
That's my point. Exactly. Right. It's just an assumption that you want to give up your organs. And so who better to prey on than all of these young people who are dying of fentanyl death? And these organs are very lucrative. I mean,
why would you want a fentanyl addict's liver?
I don't know. I mean, do you get to know where these things come from? Because at the end of the day, are they cataloging? Oh, this one came from a fentanyl overdose.
Well, I assume this person in Pittsburgh who got a Canadian heart knew that the person had ALS. Wouldn't you want to know basic things about the heart you're about to buy?
I mean, I don't know. The black market for that. I mean, we've covered it deeply about Ukraine and the massive organ harvesting operation in Ukraine.
I mean, it's not like I'd like to see the maintenance log on your car. Like, you definitely want to see it on your organ.
Your Carfax report.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I see the Carfax for that heart before I accept it?
But, you know, the lack of organs, available organs, like, are you going to say, well, we have this one. This was from a fentanyl overdose. You know, this person died. Their heart stopped. Do you want this liver or not? Because this is all we got right now.
Who would want that? You're saying there's a market for it.
Okay. I'm saying there's a market for it. And I'm also saying that they're hiding it. I mean, they're hiding it. They're not telling you where these things are coming from. That's the other piece of this.
Well, I also am saying, I'm presenting to you, the audience, if you were terminally ill and you said, well, there's a person willing to die for you, you know, will you get into surgery while that person is put to death? And you have to come up with that sort of ethical quandary and accept that for the rest of your life. I think most of us would have pause about it and say, well, okay, but it's kind of creepy. I'm waiting for that person to die so that their organ can go into me. You know, did you ever see the movie Return to Me with
David Duchovny?
David Duchovny. I loved that movie. Yeah, it's sort of, it presents sort of this challenge of, like, you know, the ethically accepting someone else's organ, even if you needed it. I just can't believe we're living this way.
Yeah, it's deeply demonic and it's transhuman. I mean, that's exactly what you're seeing in Canada right now, this transhumanism. It's deeply disturbing. Let us know your thoughts on that. All right, coming up, we're going to talk about the hundreds of thousands of people that went to Charlie Kirk's memorial. Did they know they were about to be digitally tracked and monitored and then start receiving like text messages the next day to solicit donations? What is going on here? And what is the shadowy organization behind all of this? And even like downloading certain applications could have got you tracked digitally. We've been, of course, following like the Palantir, the digital surveillance state that we're all entering into right now as they foment chaos with assassinations and bombings. They all want us to be controlled and tracked. And this is what's coming. We're going to talk about this with a journalist, an investigative journalist who blew this story wide open. But first, how much time do you spend clicking around online every day, searching, scrolling, typing, juggling endless tabs? It's ridiculous when you think about it. Well, there could be a browser that actually helps you get your time back. It's called Comet, and it's from the team over at Perplexity AI. And this isn't just another browser with a search bar. Comet is powered by AI. It can actually do things for you across the web. You can ask it to book a flight, order dinner, schedule a meeting, summarize an article or YouTube video, which like ChatGPT cannot do right now. These other AI things cannot do that. And it literally clicks, types, and scrolls around the web unlike a human would. It's like having a personal assistant that lives inside your browser, getting things done for you while you move on with your day. Now, I'm testing it ourselves. It's kind of wild to watch it because you can like watch it actually navigate sites in real time, booking things, checking details, even sending emails. It feels like I don't know. It feels like the future. And it also feels a little bit like, you know, for accessibility folks that need accessibility features like this could, you know, be a game changer. So go try it for yourself right now. Head over to pplx.ai/redacted. Again, that's pplx.ai/redacted. And when you download Comet, you get a free month of Rumble Premium for free. Don't just browse the web. Let your browser do the talking and working for you.
Mr. Monopoly here. Monopoly is back at McDonald's. Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to
get your bag.
Two ways to peel for a chance to
get your bag.
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to
get your bag.
Play Monopoly at McDonald's.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. No purchase necessary. See rules at playatmcd.com for full details and amoe.playatmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus play ends November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at COTA.com/service changes. That's COTA.com/service changes.
All right. How's everyone in the chat room doing today? Nice to see the tens of thousands of you that joined us on this Monday. Great to see everybody. Let us know where you're joining us from. And thank you for subscribing and being a part of our program here. We really appreciate it. We are not supported by big tech. We are not supported by big pharma. We are not supported by investors. We're supported by you and the few sponsors we have here on the show. So thank you for your support. I need water, by the way.
Give me some water. It's got lipstick marks on it, but...
It's like the pinkest bottle in the world. All right. Thank you. Beggars can't be choosers.
Yeah. You didn't have to say mean things about my water bottle if you were borrowing it.
Mine's empty right now. All right. Well, as we barrel headlong into a permanent surveillance state in the United States, something disturbing has come to light surrounding the Charlie Kirk Memorial. Days before that event, Israel reportedly signed a $4 million contract with a California firm called Show Faith by Works. Now, according to new reporting by investigative journalist Brian Ferentz, the SAT same company was behind what they described as the largest Christian geofencing campaign in U.S. history. After the memorial, even Turning Point's Andrew Colvett openly admitted this on the Jesse Waters show that their tech partners, had tracked more than 270,000 phones in and around the stadium. Watch.
Break a little bit of news on your program, Jesse. Our partners that do sort of geotagging with devices, they told us that they tracked over 277,000 devices in the vicinity of State Farm Stadium in Glendale, Arizona. Wow. 277,000. So that just gives you an idea of the scale of humanity out there. But
yeah, but it also gives you the scale of something darker. Like, how do you know that number? Did these people consent to that? Just so you understand, people who came to the event to mourn Charlie Kirk were digitally tagged under the label of outreach. I'm going to reach out to these people afterwards. And at the same time, reports suggest that Charlie had rejected an enormous financial offer connected to foreign interests, sparking internal turmoil at Turning Points USA. More of that story, I'm sure, will come out. Was this data tracking campaign simply about outreach or something much deeper? The timing of those contracts and the mass digital sweep of Christians attending this event demands answers. Joining us now is the journalist who first uncovered this entire network, Brian Ferentz. He's an investigative reporter whose work has been exposing the data mining operations here, money trails that few other people are willing to touch. Brian, thank you for joining us here on the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So let's start with what you found buried in these contracts here and these FARA documents.
Sure, that's a good point. And I do just want to say, first of all, the assassination of Charlie Kirk was an absolute tragedy. It was shocking. I saw your show earlier, I think it was 4 days ago, talking about, you know, the potential military involvement, other foreign involvement. And what is shocking to me is that, you know, most of his employees at Turning Point USA have not been questioning this clearly false narrative by the FBI. So I'll tie into that in just a second. So in terms of this this FARA document that you were mentioning, I do want to give credit to several other investigative reporters that assisted me. That's all. If you follow me on X at BrianFerrance1 or BrianFerrance.com, they're all sourced and referenced there. So I want to give credit to them as well. But if you go into that FARA document, one church that you see very prominently is Dream City Church. And Dream City Church in Phoenix, Arizona, is where Charlie Kirk, yeah, it's highlighted there. He has all of his fundraisers, all of his rallies there at Dream City Church. Hosts Trump there. TPUSA holds their AmFest there. And in an article in the Arizona Republic, Pastor Tommy Barnett was mentioning in the article, first of all, he was comparing, you know, Charlie Kirk to Jesus, which, you know, some would maybe question that. But he was mentioning that during one of their services, they played an AI recording of Charlie Kirk's voice, like beyond the grave, saying, you know, first of all, I want you to know I'm fine, not because my body is fine, but because my soul is secure in Christ. And I knew the risk and I do it all again. So that was an AI video that they played. But the Dream City Church, if you look into, you know, their alliances and what they're doing, they have on their website several pro-Israel websites. So that's why I personally believe that Dream City Church is not, you know, passive in this geofencing. It says in the documentation, all these churches, they're going to be, you know, conducting this geofencing. It can include, you know, connecting to the wireless network of that church, for example, but certainly entering any of those, you know, physical boundaries. And then, you know, Pastor Tommy Barnett, given some of his comments and some of their pro-Israel stances, I believe they're an active participant. The $4.1 million from Israel that they're spending, it also includes paying pastors in their homilies, in writings, to deliver this pro-Israel messaging and propaganda. So I have some concerns there, especially how closely related Turning Point is to Dream City Church. So that's within in the FARA documentation. It does reference, similar to what Andrew Colvett mentioned about, I think he said geotagging there, but it's very, very similar. And then there's some concerning connections also between, Turning Point has created a company called Superfeed Technologies Incorporated, and they run several large apps, including Scott Pressler's Early Vote Action app. And if you look at the privacy data there, it says very clearly, this information may be shared. Yeah, so that what's being shared on the screen, Turning Point USA, Superfeed Technologies, which is a company created as a foreign for-profit company in Arizona, behind
Turning Point. It's a foreign for-profit company that's running all of these apps?
The filing is actually listed there. I think I might have sent it to your producer. I have it handy as well. But it lists the directors, and it mentions it's a foreign for-profit company. They're basically making the apps for Turning Point, the apps for Scott Pressler's Early Vote Action, several GOP groups, and any ballot chasing. Yeah, there it is. You can see at the top, it's a little bit blurry there, but that's off of the Arizona Corporate Commission website. It used to be called a different name, but Superfeed Technologies. And you can see not only is Tyler Boyer mentioned there, who was the COO of Turning Point Action. I believe he's now the CEO of Turning Point Action, which Charlie Kirk used to hold that position. But also Erica Kirk's mother, Lori, I forget the pronunciation, but it's Lori Frensive or something like that. She's listed on the board of directors of Superfeed Technologies as well. So I think there's a couple things to connect now, given that you have their official Turning Point spokesman and the Charlie Kirk Show producer talking about geofencing through tech partners. You have their very closely aligned Dream City Church, which talks, the pastor also talked about their growing relationship with Charlie Kirk. It was ordained by God. The program will continue. You know, that's their official location for all their rallies. They're actively involved in this geofencing, this Israel, you know, propaganda campaign. And then you have Superfeed Technologies, which is Tyler Boyer again, and it's a Turning Point created company. Anyone who downloaded that app, it's very likely, it says at least in the privacy agreement, that your data may be shared with third parties. So, you know, did Turning Point and Superfeed license or sell that data to Israel directly, to other companies. And again, they make a lot of other apps, including news apps. So it's, I think it's, yeah, you can see it listed there. There's a bunch of GOP apps.
So basically, if you've downloaded, if you personally, anybody watching right now has downloaded any of these apps, what happens to your data?
Well, it depends specifically on the app. But if you look between the Google Play Store and then in iTunes, it says the different privacy and what is released. And in some of them, it says by downloading it, you agree to their privacy policy and you give license to share your email address, your location, your app usage, your phone MEI, your unique identifier. And then with it, there's a couple other items in there that varies from app to platform. But basically, that's all the geofencing data. That's exactly what they need to know who you are, who your known associates are, where you go, what you do. I mean, think about taking an Uber app that's saying the time when you enter and leave an event. And then, I mean, some of these apps have a lot of information, not just location information, but it could, it's very easily used for marketing. It's very easily used for propaganda. It was used by the federal government to prosecute J6 attendees, which was later ruled unconstitutional. So I guess my question is, if that's unconstitutional, how can it be constitutional to violate the privacy of all these citizens who are simply going to church, going to what they believe is a political rally, but then if they download the Turning Point app, or you have, you know, their official spokesman saying, yeah, we're tracking you, or, you know, their partners, Dream City Church, saying, yes, we are absolutely participating in this geofencing and this pro-Israel targeting, which is absolutely aligned with our mission. I mean, it's not like, at the end, Charlie Kirk was trying to do the right thing. He was saying, you know, what is going on? Maybe some of this foreign money from Israel is not a good thing. He called for a widespread audit of his entire TPU.
But if I may interrupt you, this app had been built while he was still alive, presumably, so he would have known that it was a foreign entity building his company's app, right?
Well, so that's a good question. And so, if you, again, the CEO and chairman of the board is Tyler Boyer. So how much, I'm sure that Charlie Kirk did know to some extent, but I'm not sure how much falls on Tyler Boyer and how much falls on Charlie Kirk. But what we do know at the end is Charlie Kirk was questioning that. He was calling for a company-wide audit, which I haven't seen anything happen to that since his death. But there was an internal memo. He was calling for a culture change. He was calling for an audit of expenses because I think Candace Owens has touched on this. Potentially there was some money, I don't know, being misused or possibly embezzled or just spent, you know, unreasonably.
They were burning through money. He was like, where's all this money going? It's like disappearing. And
we know that he had called for an audit on internally as well of his finances. There's emails to his staff saying as such within the month preceding his death.
That's exactly right. So I think when you put all that information together, it raises a lot of questions. Obviously, it's a violation of privacy. Probably many people, even though it's in a privacy policy they agree to, they're not aware that potentially their information is being sold to these tech partners or foreign countries or even Dream City Church, which is then selling it to Israel. So I think there's a lot of concerns there. And then I agree that not only should people be more cautious about what apps they're downloading, they need to look at that privacy policy. It does say on those apps that they can request to have their data deleted. So personally, if I had downloaded the Turning Point app or the Early Vote Action app through Scott Presser, I would request that my data be deleted. I would remove that app. And then there's a lot of other questions, but depending on how much time we have, go ahead if you have any other questions for me.
Yeah, I mean, if there's anything else that stands out to you, I think one of the things that stood out to me is that when people left this event, people were complaining online. They're like, hey, like a day later, I was receiving a text message from Erica Kirk, kind of like asking for money. And it's like, I just was at this memorial event and it's really weird that they now have my data and they're asking for money. And Erica Kirk's name was on it, right? It looked like it was from her. But it's like, I don't know. I mean, the next day, I know it's all politics, you know, but the next day they're soliciting money and raising money using Erica Kirk's name now that they've tracked your phone from this memorial event you went to?
No, that's a great question. And I've covered, Turning Point pretty closely. So what I observed there was that message, and there was about 3 text messages and also some emails. They were actually sent out through Turning Point Action, which is the 501c4 arm of Turning Point, which is their political arm under Tyler Boyer. And even though it had Erica Kirk's name and message, it's very likely it was sent through Turning Point Action's infrastructure. It's certainly linked to their page and then their fundraising link. They were selling T-shirts of Charlie Kirk and different things. But when you talk about the fundraising, I did want to mention this also. I was tracking several of the Give, Send, Go campaigns. And, the Kirk family, at least $11 million was raised for after Charlie Kirk's death, at least $11 million. So I believe it's a little bit disingenuous for a text to be sent out. I mean, Charlie Kirk's net worth was approximately $14 million prior to his death. If he had $14 million, he probably had some life insurance. His annual income through his assets and, his show and everything and books is about $1 million a year. And then $11 million was raised for the Kirk's family. So to say, we need to raise money for their family, I don't know how accurate that is. I don't know how appropriate that is immediately following his death. And then, of course, there was a big push by Turning Point, specifically Turning Point Action, to raise funds, get donations, sell T-shirts. There were several comments where several people said it was very distasteful. It left a bad taste in their mouth. And then it also raised some other issues. Erica Kirk mentioned that they're going to be posting from Charlie Kirk's personal account beyond the grave. She says they have diaries of his and financial projections through 2028. And then also that they have hours and hours of his voice recorded. But it raises the question, well, his voice has already been arguably misused by Dream City Church using AI voice. How do we know that what Turning Point and Mrs. Kirk is going to be releasing, how do we know that Charlie Kirk actually said that? Or could it be AI? We don't right. know.
Oh, that's terrifying.
Yeah, that's kind of creepy. Can I go back? And then, Brian, we'll get you out of here. But I love your reporting on this. This data that's collected and the people that went to the memorial event or otherwise, because people are asking, so where is this data going? Is this going to this Israeli company? Is it going to Israel that now is partnered with them on this? Or is it staying in America? Does Turning Points have this data? Like, does Israel have this data now?
Well, I think it's difficult to know that for certain. I mean, what we know is that there's a new initiative where Israel has announced they will be purchasing the geolocation data. Churches like Dream City Church are participating. So certainly if you attend Dream City Church, they will be purchasing your data. I guess the question is, did Turning Point already sell it? Did Scott Pressler and Early Vote Action already sell it? Did Superfeed Technologies, which is an independent company, did they sell the data? And then I believe it's built on the Google Firebase platform also. So now there's a question of, did Google have the data? Did Google sell the data directly to Israel? Because Google has done some very pro-Israel marketing. I believe they have something like, 40,000, 400,000 paid directly to Google for pro-Israel messaging. So, I mean, it seems very likely that one way or another, that data did make it to Israel.
Jeez. So, I mean, we put that Times of Israel article up there. I mean, they're admitting it. Like, they're buying it. This isn't like propaganda. It's coming from right from the Times of Israel. Like, they're planning, buying data about pastors, buying this information about Christians who are going to these churches. Why do you need this data?
That's right. And they also mentioned, and it came out recently, that there was $7,000 being paid per post of pro-Israel posts to these influencers. And I can tell you for certainty that many of the Turning Point influencers, they had an entire influencer program at one point. They're all very pro-Israel. Likely they have been receiving and making paid posts for Israel in the Turning Point network. So,
are these the same that were paid by Israel, or were they paid by Turning Points to make these pro-Israel posts?
Well, that's a tricky question, but most of the $7,000 posts were paid to a social media company like Influenceable, for example, directly from Israel or one of their companies in America. For example, this geofencing was done through that that faith company in California, so probably was run through, you know, a similar California. Those companies are usually created like within 3 months, by the way. So a company stood up, the money's funded. They then do an ad buy through a social media influencer company like Influenceable, and then they pay, you know, different amounts of money to post different messages. But there's several people on my post that commented, since Charlie Kirk's death, there's been not a single Turning Point employee or influencer that has questioned anything about Israel, aside from maybe Candace Owens, who, you know, had a big falling out with them. It just hasn't happened. It's almost a company policy.
Right. Now, I'm trying to find, I put something in my notes recently and I can't find it. About a new organization that was registered by FARA. So it's an Israeli organization that is specifically a Christian organization to target Christians specifically because they realize that they the only Christians that they have left are Christian Zionists who are fundamentalists, and they're mostly losing the younger generation. So it makes sense that they would want to capture the sort of Christian support that they have lost, and that they could do this not only through your data, but through these, because this could be quite targeted, right? It's a way to endear people to their Christianity, and also a part of this Christianity must be a Zionist support. So this is, I'm extrapolating. I don't have this with me right now. I made a note of it and can't find it live on the air here. But it makes sense, like as a tactic, it would make sense. So we'll just leave it there because I don't have any proof to ask you about it right now.
Sure. And was it Show Faith by Works LLC? That's the company.
It might have been Show Faith by Works. Is that what you brought?
Yeah.
That's exactly what. Yes, this is exactly it. Okay, so you brought it. I didn't have to. Thank you.
No worries. I think the other thing to. Oh, go ahead.
Why don't you explain it? Since I said I only left it as a note. I didn't go down this. Why don't you tell us what it is?
Sure. So from the FARA documents and also the Times of Israel article and just the plan of what's being done, it's not only just marketing through this geofencing data, but it's actually paying both the influencers and the actual pastors of the Christian churches. So you might get a homily that says, you know, hey, keep in mind, Israel's our greatest ally. They're the chosen people. Let's keep sending them $50 billion a year. You know, no one question Israel or you're out of the church. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Brian, thank you for this. It's deeply disturbing. I think there's some, you know, again, I hate to say this, but I mean, where there's smoke, there's fire. And we now have the actual fire. We have the proof of this. And we have the confirmation literally by Colbert on Jesse Waters' program, admitting that they, with their tech partners, were managed to track these people. So what comes next? I don't know, but this is deeply disturbing. And I would encourage, I guess, anybody who's downloaded these apps to go inside the apps and demand that they delete this data. But this is, there's some dark things happening here. Brian, thank you for your great reporting on this. Follow Brian. What's your X account, Brian, that people can follow you and follow your reporting?
It's at Brian Ferentz 1, but I do want to end with just one question real quickly. I'd ask people to visit realscottpressler.com, and ask yourself, is there a connection between registering low propensity voters and pushing mail-in voting and early voting, which then allows Mossad and AIPAC to steal elections and place AIPAC-aligned politicians on both sides in office? realscottpressler.com.
That's a great question.
Yeah, interesting.
Thank you, Brian, for that. That's something to ponder.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me on the show. I appreciate it. And Brian,
but yeah, Israel great. Stood to lose. Israel didn't stand to lose the 2024 election. Israel's going to gain either way.
That's exactly what I'm saying. If you look at the politicians in the federal Congress who have received funding, significant funding from AIPAC, both Republicans and Democrats, what I'm saying is question. Is there a vested interest in stealing elections, not for like the Democrats or the Republicans, but for the pro-AIPAC candidate and making sure that they are in office.
Yeah, I guess keep our eye on Thomas Massey's district and that upcoming election for sure. Focus on that. Brian, great stuff today. Thank you so much for this and great reporting. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on the show.
You bet. It's unbelievable.
Yes, it is.
I mean, okay. What do you guys think about that? There's something really dirty going on here. Yeah. Don't you think?
Yes. But I mean, it's also quite clever. You know, if you think about like these sincere ways that people want to engage with their politics and then the ways that it can be exploited, it's like you can't really trust anything, you know? We don't sell your data at the Redacted newsletter. I promise you that. And you absolutely should continue to ask questions about what our motives are because, you know, you can't trust anything. You have to be skeptical of everybody. And if I tell you you can only trust us, then you should be skeptical of that as well. We have to continue to have honest conversations.
Yeah. Anyone says you need to trust us.
Us
it's,
only.
It's our way or the highway.
Right.
You know, and by the way, if you ask any questions, you're an idiot. I love this crowd that's emerging now. If you ask questions, you're an idiot. Okay. Really, you're asking questions, you're an idiot. I always tell my kids, ask questions. Always ask questions. Because the person that's sitting there doing all the talking in the room is always the person you want to avoid because they act like they know everything. I'd much rather have a conversation with someone who's asking questions, trying to get to the bottom of things. Mm-hmm. Now, we don't have all the answers, but we're seeking the truth on this show. That's what we're doing every day here. So thank you guys so much for being a part of it. By the way, someone in our chat room just to say, I like the shirt.
Yours or mine?
Mine. Don't Tread on Me. This is our new Don't Tread on Me shirt in the redactedstore.com if you want to go there and visit. But yeah, this is one of my favorite new shirts. Don't Tread on Me, the Revolutionary War inspired Don't Tread on Me shirt. In fact, we saw an actual flag the other day of my son knows the story now because he loves the story behind it. And he's like, look, the Don't Tread on Me flag. I was like, exactly.
Anyway. Philip was trying to say something.
Oh, I was just sitting here chuckling at the idea of like, you know, trying to equate curiosity and skepticism with being an idiot, you know, because those things just classically go together. Like, that's funny to me.
Yeah. Me too.
Yeah. If you ask questions now, this is emerging now online. You'll just be all over X and you'll be like, how dare you ask questions of the FBI?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
They literally lied to our faces about J6 and I mean, how many stories has the FBI lied to us about? I mean, go back decades, but now we're taking them at their word. You tell us the truth. Cash Patel swoops in with his little Punisher challenge coins that he just rolled out. Like, okay, all right, jackass, we're going to pay attention to everything you say and believe everything you say. Not going to happen.
Right.
Not going to happen.
You know, I went looking for exactly what he had just shown us, that Village Crazy Lady information about the FARA documents.
Right.
And I cannot find it now, even though I bookmarked it. I can't find her, and she is prolific.
Mel?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you find her in your X feed? I went looking at my bookmarks, and I can't even type in.
What are you trying to find?
Just her profile. Has it been taken down? Do you see her at all?
I don't know.
Like, it says this account doesn't exist. She's got millions. Are able to find it. Okay. All right. Because I was like, what? This? I mean, obviously, I always distrust the mediums and the social networks the most. But okay. Well, then I will look harder. I was just trying to find that in real time, and my browser was failing me. Okay. That conspiracy has been tamped down.
Yeah. Check your VPN if there's some issue.
I was about to bring up a new conspiracy, but I'll stand down on that until tomorrow.
Thank you guys for subscribing to our newsletter. Thanks for being a part of our show. Appreciate you joining us all here. And people in the comments, further comments? People are like wondering about our YouTube comments. No, YouTube does censor comments, not us. We don't allow links. Like, you're not allowed to post spam links in our chat. That's you can't do that. But YouTube regularly censors people's comments. So just FYI. Rumble, we're on Rumble as well, live. Most of our audience has moved over to Rumble now just because it's a free speech platform. And pretty much you can say whatever you want in the comments. Like GrassGuy0313, he's saying exactly what he wants right there, which is, I'm not going to read it though.
What?
I don't know. Natalie, you look beautiful today.
What is that supposed to mean? Natalie is dressed like a liberal because it's Grandma Chic.
Grandma Chic. Hey, it's Grandma Monday here on Redacted.
Like I guess liberals people, who wear their bangs.
And I guess.
Grandma
I guess,
fashion.
I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's fine. You can say that.
Canio says, or Threshold says, seems all the three-letter agencies are just one big group now. Yeah. Mm-hmm. YouTube also shadow bans, Absorbo says. Oh, yeah, for sure they shadow ban. I know they're saying they're not going to do that, but give me a break. We absolutely know they do that.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, thank you guys so much for joining us here on this Monday. Really appreciate it. We'll be back tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern. Thank you guys so much and have a wonderful evening. Bye, everyone.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at cota.com/service changes. That's cota.com/service changes.